The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Ivan Yates filling in for Pat Kenny this week. Now, all this week is Brain Awareness Week, in which the Neurological Alliance of Ireland aims to promote greater awareness of brain, of the brain itself, and brain conditions. They're advocating for the need for more investment in services, research and prevention. This morning, we specifically want to discuss the importance of raising awareness for Huntington's disease. So we're going to have in studio Professor Niall Pender, who's a clinical neuropsychologist, and Mrs. Bernadette Spellman, who will tell us the story of her husband, Micheál, who was diagnosed in 2002 with Huntington's disease and sadly passed away in January of this year. You're both most welcome. Niall, first of all, when we're speaking about Brain Awareness Week, like I'm thinking of people who I know who have died or have been diagnosed with brain tumours, people who have motor neuron disease, people who have Alzheimer's disease, and so on. Just give us a little overview of brain illnesses.
Yes. So Brain Awareness Week is 20 years old. So we've been doing it in Ireland, and the Neurological Alliance of Ireland have been promoting this for the last 20 years. And the purpose really is to highlight, I suppose, the rate and frequency and the lack of services for people with neurological problems. There's about 800,000 people roughly in Ireland who have some type of neurological problem. So almost everybody in Ireland will know somebody, a family member or a friend who has
800,000?
Yeah. Right. When you look at the broad range of anything to do with the brain, it's
huge, sort of one in five.
Huge number. So almost everybody will know somebody who has it or have a family member who has it.
And that would include dementia?
Dementias, yeah, everything. The whole range. Head injuries, dementia, strokes. So anything that affects the brain is included within that group. And that can range from people with migraine and headaches all the way across to dementias, degenerative conditions like we'll hear today, but strokes, car accidents resulting in head injuries, concussions, the whole range of symptoms. And what we're trying to do is promote an awareness of those difficulties that people are suffering from, because you have the initial incident or you might have a diagnosis, but then there's a range of complex services that you need in order to continue to either recover from the injury or to help you live with the consequences of it.
Okay, so tell us about, you know, say I've heard of Huntington's disease. I don't know anyone who suffered it. Tell us clinically what's happening here.
Yeah, so Huntington's disease is a rare neurodegenerative disease. And by that we mean it's a condition that results in the brain deteriorating over time. There's about, we estimate, in around 1,000 people in Ireland who have symptoms of the disease, and maybe about 3,000 who are at risk. We don't really know. There's no epidemiological study done in Ireland. So the condition is inherited, and that's probably the first thing that people need to understand. You have it, if you have a parent with the disease, you have a 50-50 chance of getting the disease as a child. So every child of a parent with Huntington's is at risk of this disease. And the disease has three pillars, really, that cause problems. The first is a movement disorder. So patients present with twitches and writhing movements that can affect their mobility and their movement in the early stages, and then their speech and swallowing in later stages. The other pillar then is there's a very strong psychiatric feature to it. So people present with mental health problems. It's often been likened to schizophrenia. So in fact, before the genetic test for this, about 40% of people were misdiagnosed as having schizophrenia, and many ended up in long stay asylums in earlier generations. And the last then is a series of changes in thinking and concentration, like a dementia that looks like an Alzheimer's or other type of dementia. So there's three pillars, and patients can present with each of those difficulties over time as it changes.
And what's actually happening inside the brain?
So the gene.
And how does it vary from something like motor neuron disease?
It's actually a very similar rate and frequency to motor neuron disease. But so it's inherent because the gene that people inherit from their family member causes problems over time in the middle of the brain, a place in the brain called the basal ganglia, which initially manages and controls movement. And those cells die off. And as the disease progresses, more and more cells die off in the brain, affecting the connections of that part of the brain with the rest of the brain. And slowly the people lose their ability to function. They need care. They might need long-term psychiatric support. And they also might need support for, as I said, the dementia. So many people will not be able to work. They will lose the capacity to work, and they will need care.
So no cure, no prevention?
no cure. It's an incurable condition at the moment, and it is terminal, unfortunately. There are a lot of trials going on at the moment looking at disease-modifying drugs, which are drugs that will help slow down the disease. We have a trial going on, an observational trial in Beaumont called Enroll, which is part of that. And really the aim is to try and find something that will stop the gene having its effect on the brain and slow it
down. And typically what age? You know, when you think of Alzheimer's, you think maybe people in their 70s, dementia and so on. What age could Huntington's disease strike in terms of the symptoms?
Typically around 40, in early 40s to mid 40s, but it can vary. So the type of genetic mutation that you inherit will determine the age and speed that you get it. So the bigger the genetic mutation, the earlier and more severe you'll get the disease. But on average, it's about 40. So people are young, they have young families, they're trying to work. And then you might have, as Bernie will talk about, you might have multiple members of the same family with the disease and at risk. So you might have a spouse caring for their sibling or their own spouse and in-laws and children and grandchildren. I'm seeing grandchildren now of people that we started working in Beaumont 20 years ago.
It is desperate.
Yeah,
welcome, Bernadette, and our sincere sympathies
you,
on
Ivan.
The passing of Micheál earlier this year. I'm looking at a photograph. I don't know what waterfall it is, whether it's Enniskerry or wherever, of Micheál, yourself and your two sons. And it was taken around the millennium, 2000.
That's correct,
he was diagnosed in 2002.
You
all look perfectly healthy, all four of you. It's a happy family portrait. Tell us about the journey that you've been on since then.
Well, Micheál, well, he did the test in 2002. At that stage, we had two children. I did notice little things because obviously his mother had the disease and you're super heightened to any kind of little changes. So he used to twitch his foot at night looking at the TV. Now, you think that's nothing, and we all twitch our fingers and feet. And other little changes, you know, one of the days I remember the most was the day that our youngest son was born. And because he was looking after our older child at home, you know, he had more stress in his life. And it was actually the time the nurses' strike was on. So I had to come out of hospital earlier. And I said to him, come in at 11 o'clock to get me out of here. And he managed barely to get in at about 5 o'clock in the evening. And I remember coming home in the car with the baby. And I said, there is something seriously wrong here. And it was the loneliest day of my life. I knew, you know, I was going into a black future. So we went for the test in the National Genetic Centre in Crumlin Hospital, and Micheál still looked fine. Micheál's symptoms were more cognitive and emotional than physical. His physical symptoms came last. So if you met him on the street and you see there in the photograph, he looks absolutely fabulous, and he was a very good looking man. But cognitively, he was having great difficulties, and he found work very difficult. And one day he went into work and just resigned, just like that. He never thought, you know, who's going to pay the mortgage, you know, all that type of thing. Now, luckily, I was working and had a career, but it...
And tell me, in the journey to from 25 back to 2002, when he got his diagnosis, did you get a good decade before things like motor neuron? You know, I was very, you know, I met Charlie Bird a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was holding his own
for
a long period. And then things that deter, whether it's mobility or whether it's speech or so on. Is it off a cliff or is it very gradual?
No, it's not off a cliff. It's very, very slow. And when we spoke to... the genetic counsellor, she just said, bad news. And she said, I'll put on the kettle. You know, the solution to all problems in Ireland is to make tea. And she just said, you have to condense life. And we were just in shock and in grief. You know, I immediately felt overwhelming grief. Micheál was just in total shock. You know, the rug of your dreams is pulled from under you. You know, you can't dream, you can't plan. But we did manage to pull it together. And yes, we did get, you know, a good decade of travelling.
And he ultimately went into care, did he?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
And just tell us about the last few years.
Well, he had a bad fall in the house and he was admitted to the matter. And we got things fixed up there and he was in a step-down centre. And he had to get out of there because he was deemed a bed blocker. So we were going crazy trying to find a suitable nursing home that would have a multidisciplinary team. We went to a number of nursing homes who said they would not take somebody with Huntington's because it requires such a high level of care. Eventually, a nursing home said they would take him, but they weren't really able to care for him. For one thing, somebody with Huntington's disease requires 6,000 calories per day.
Weight loss is a significant issue.
Yes, it is.
They fade away.
Yeah.
So we have limited time.
Yeah.
Now, what are you advocating for in terms of either clinical, hospital or care settings?
So I suppose what we want to do, one is highlight the fact that this disease exists. The Huntington's Disease Association is a very small organisation. It's a charity that provides an enormous support for people. So we want to highlight their need and their need for resources. But we also want to highlight the importance of having a proper care pathway for people with Huntington's disease in Ireland. So we're, you know, from diagnosis, the genetic diagnosis that you heard in Crumlin, right the way through all the different stages of the disease to late stage care. We don't have that at the moment. We have two neurological specialist nurses were appointed last year to Ireland. It's the first step on that pathway. But we really need to have multiple centres where people in
Bloomfield Christ, Hospital, is that a dedicated centre?
Bloomfield has the only dedicated long-term care beds in the country. We don't have anything before that and there's very limited palliative or supportive care or even respite care. So when people are in crisis, they need access to service quickly. They don't need to be going through A&Es and waiting for hours on end with somebody with a serious movement disorder. So we're in the early stage of this and we would hope to see a proper care plan from start to finish for all people at Huntington's.
Some text questions and I'll put them to you. A question for the Dr. Ree Huntington's. Would motor neuron be misdiagnosed as Huntington's? A family member and her kids were told their dad had Huntington's after he recovered from cancer. Kids were told it was inherited from their granny who was deceased. They panicked for 3 years, then they got motor neuron and died a year later. No more mention of Huntington's. Could the diseases overlap and could cancer trigger them? Separately, Brian in Wexford asked, can you ask if a child is still at 50-50 risk if a grandparent has Huntington's disease but their parent doesn't? What would you say to those?
So taking the latter one, which is easier, if your parent does not have the gene or didn't inherit the gene, then you don't get it. So it's gone. So if your grandparent has it, but your parent didn't inherit the gene, then you won't get the gene. It's gone from your line. So that
and is there often confusion of misdiagnosis between
MND? It can be. These neurological conditions, these neurological conditions do overlap and sometimes you do have both together. The advantage with Huntington's, I suppose, is we do have a genetic test, but only about 25% of people actually go for the test because of the stigma and the psychological issues around it. But it is very complicated and the diagnosis of particularly these complex neurodegenerative diseases can be very complicated.
Okay. I had a text earlier on the show from Mary Butler, who has a particular health responsibility. What's your message to government, Bernadette, finally?
Well, I think with the rare diseases, they are forgotten. And we need more awareness for the rare diseases. And this is particularly complicated with the cognitive, emotional and physical part of it. And
the care pathway would be
yes.
Is there a website that people interested in this can go on?
Well, huntingtons.ie. Yep. And I would say to anybody who's looking for a cause, please think of a rare disease charity and a small
corporate
charity.
Yes, exactly.
Anything.
All right. Well, it's absolutely a desperate diagnosis to get. And the hereditary aspect of it is really, really distressing. Mrs. Bernadette Spellman, whose husband, Micheál, and her brother-in-law also was diagnosed. That's Micheál's brother, and widowed from it. And Professor Niall Pender, thank you for highlighting those issues. Still to come on News Talk.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.